to the Game Lounge.
Motherfucking Game Lounge.
Welcome to the Game Lounge.
Motherfucking Game Lounge.
Welcome to the Game Lounge.
Motherfucking Game Lounge.
Suck it.
Bitches.
Welcome, welcome, come on into the Game Lounge. This is episode number 22, and I am the fisherman, and Farb is not here. He is away on a sunny, wonderful Mexican cruise where I'm sure he's just drinking the fruit trees out of business. Probably the liquor market, too, but, you know, the man loves his free drinks. Anyway, so I didn't want to leave you guys hanging with without an episode of the Game Lounge. And so I have pulled in some resources, pulled in my friend from the Sarcastic Gamer Forums and from Talking Chip Forums, a la douche. He is going to sit in on a number of the segments today. And then also the Fisherwoman is going to be giving us a care package on Fable 3, just released this week. And first of all, let me apologize up front, and let me go ahead and make my apologies for the audio quality. This is kind of mashed together, and this sounds pretty good, but the rest of it sounds kind of dicey. We were using headset mics to record, me and Aladouche were. So the audio quality may not be as high-five as you guys are used to from the Game Lounge, but hey, deal with it. It's episode number 22, and we're going to roll it on into Digital Desk with me and Aladouche. And this is the Digital Desk, and I have dragged down Aladouche into the Game Lounge. I made him dress up like Farba. I put a bunch of gel in his hair, and I gave him a fruity cocktail. Because I miss Farva so much, and so Aladouche is going to stand in as our surrogate Farva for the Digital Desk. How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. I gotta imagine this is pretty disappointing for your regular listeners.
Don't say that. Don't say that. I mean, we all miss Farva, but how could you not?
I don't.
I'm sure you'll do just great. So let's go ahead and get into the stories. The first story is about Diablo 3. A new class has been announced with Diablo 3, the Demon Hunter class, and this looks like, I don't know, are you into Diablo or are those kinds of dungeon crawling action games?
Generally, I don't like dungeon crawlers at all. I haven't played either of the first two Diablos. I've been recommended them left and right, and I'd really like to. I just haven't. I'll probably check this one out when it comes out, but... I'm really not excited for it.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I never played either of the first Diablos either, but getting into games recently, sort of like Dragon Age and getting into Torchlight has kind of gotten me really. Torchlight was one that really got me pumped up for Diablo 3. Anyways, this Demon Hunter class is like the ranged class. It uses crossbows and other ranged weapons to fight in Diablo. And now there are, I believe, five classes left. Five classes announced for Diablo 3.
Yep.
There's still no release date announced for this thing, but. You gotta imagine it's coming pretty soon. It was at PAX last year.
Well, what I heard today was that they announced at BlizzCon over the weekend that it's over halfway done.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if that slates it at 2011 or 2012, but it's over halfway done, whatever that means.
Right. Yeah, I mean, but it took a fucking forever to get it halfway done, so maybe another 15 years before we see this thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy.
It'll come out at the same time as the Hobbit movie.
Yeah, so that brings the classes up to, let's see, we've got the Barbarian, the Witch Doctor, the Wizard, the Monk, and the Demon Hunter. You gotta give it to Diablo. I mean, these might break down into pretty simple archetypes of, like, Warrior and Wizard and all that stuff. But having at least naming them things like Barbarian, Witch Doctor, Monk, and Demon Hunter, at least
at least it gives the facade of it being something unique and not the same thing for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit, you know, Blizzard is they're notorious for being new and creative and giving people what they want. So I mean, it sucks because something like that is kind of come to be expected from Blizzard, but you know, at the same time, it's pretty damn cool.
Yeah, so it sounds like this is the five we've got is Barbarian, Witch Doctor, Wizard, Monk, and Demon Hunter. And you get to choose between two genders of each one of them. You can have a male or a female of each one of them. I don't know. I guess if I give it a crack, I'll probably try the Demon Hunter. I like playing ranged classes in this kind of game. I'm not really sure what the Monk's all about, but that might be kind of fun. I just in these kinds of games, I have fallen into a mold of always playing as the warrior mm-hmm. type because it's the easiest one to pick up and go with.
Yeah.
But I get bored with it, and I feel like if I went through an entire game of Diablo like that, it would get really boring. But I'm looking forward to Diablo. I may not be as into it as a lot of people are, but I'm still looking forward to seeing what they have for us.
Well, I probably should. I probably should be more excited for it than I am. I mean, I loved games. I loved Oblivion. I'm playing Dragon Age Origins right now, and I'm liking uh-huh. that one. I played a little bit of Demon's Souls, which is fucking like hair pulling hard. That game is ridiculous. Those aren't the same type of game as Diablo, but they're kind of the same world feel, I guess.
Yeah, like I was saying though, if you are wondering if you'll like Diablo 3, the best test to see if you'll like Diablo 3 is probably to play Torchlight, and you can get it on the cheap. You could, there's probably a demo out there for it, but I think you can get it for like $5.
And that's on Steam, right?
Yeah, it's on Steam. And it's a really really good. It's not as deep as Diablo 3 will be, but it's nowhere near like as pricey. So you kind of get what you pay for there, but it is the absolute litmus test as to whether you will like that kind of game or not.
Right.
If you like Torchlight, you will enjoy what Diablo 3 has to offer you, as long as it's a good game. You know, you never really know if it's going to actually turn out all that well. But you know, give that a crack and see if you'll at least be interested in Diablo 3. That's the closest thing to Diablo 2 that's come along in a long time.
Hmm.
But yeah, so that's what's going on with Diablo 3. The next story we want to talk about is that EA and Visceral are working on a new Command & Conquer game. And Visceral is the studio that has brought us games like Dead Space. And then, of course, it's Incarnations, Dead Space Ignition, Dead Space 2 is coming out. Dante's Inferno is from them. And then they've got a few other ones, like some Lord of the Rings games.
The Godfather, really, Godfather yeah, the games.
Godfather games are from them. The Simpsons game, they made that one.
Yes!
But really, their bread and butter is Dead Space. And you kind of think when you're talking Command & Conquer, God, how long has it been since you played a Command & Conquer game, Mike?
Command & Conquer. It's been a while. You know, honestly, I think the last one that I played was Tiberian Sun.
Oh, yeah? I think the last one I played was Red Alert, maybe Red Alert 2. Y'all, God, I loved the Red Alert series.
Yeah. Wait.
Such a fan.
Tiberian Sun. Was that the one right after Red Alert 2?
I think so. Yeah, that was their little branch off.
I think I played that one.
Yeah, I just loved Red Alert because it was so stupid and cheesy.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. I remember you could get a patch that let you mod what characters had what weapons. And I remember giving dogs fucking rocket launchers. And, yeah, it's just ridiculous.
Nice. Yeah, and you know what's funny is looking at Visceral Games as pedigree, the one thing I don't see on here is a RTS. It's a real-time strategy game.
Yeah.
They have a couple Lord of the Rings games. They have the Simpsons game. They actually have some golf games. The Godfather, Dead Space. I mean, Dead Space alone lend some credence to this and makes you take a second look at it and think, well, this could be something, but it's a totally different style of game. I've not seen a studio come out with a brand new RTS that's never come out with an RTS before and be successful at it? I don't know. I don't know about this move by EA throwing this one over to Visceral. You think they'd have other developers that are more versed in this if they want to reboot the franchise?
Well, maybe. I mean, it might not even be an RTS.
No, that could be.
You know, I mean, a lot of times games, and it's rarely for the better, but a lot of times games, you know, like a franchise will switch genres. Uh-huh. And sometimes it works. Nothing's coming to mind right now, but at least, you know, in theory, I think if there's a studio that can do it, I think Visceral Games definitely, I think they can.
Well, Command & Conquer did it a while back, too. They tried to come out with the first-person shooter variant of Command & Conquer. I think it was called, like, Renegade or something.
Yeah.
It was maybe, like, 10 or 15 years ago, and it was a total disaster, but I'm sure they didn't have a developer with the pedigree of Visceral.
I don't think it was that long ago, either, actually. I don't think it was 10 or 15 years ago. I might be dead wrong, but...
Right. That's a good point, that there is precedent for Command & Conquer to try something like that.
It could be anything. I mean, you put it in the Command & Conquer world, you know, and which mm-hmm. has changed a lot also, but I mean, it could be any type of genre, really.
Yeah, now I'm kind of looking forward to it more, thinking about that. That's a great point. It could very well not be a real-time strategy game. Could be a third-person shooter in the style of Dead Space. I mean, obviously, Dead Space relies so much on its ambience and its like scare factor and stuff that Command & Conquer. I mean, no matter what they did with Command & Conquer, they probably wouldn't be able to pull something like that off.
Yeah. Well, but you know, even still, I mean, I'd love to see Visceral take a shot at the RTS. I mean, why not? You know, they've got a couple of different genres already. I mean, maybe sure. maybe they can do RTS as well.
Yeah, the Command & Conquer license is kind of left for dead anyways. It's just been crapping out these past few years, and it will be nice to see it get a fresh start at a capable developer. At least it's a great thought, and then we'll see what happens. But if anyone's going to be able to pull something off, it'd probably be Visceral.
Yeah.
The next story is that Redbox, the little DVD renting kiosks that kind of pop up all over town and cities and stuff, they are going to start renting video games. $2 a day. And they've been doing it in test markets, really, really small, for about a year now. But I guess that's worked out pretty well for them, and they're going to start rolling down the coast. On the east and west coast, they're going to drop some games in there. And it sounds like there's not, obviously, it's a damn box that's about the size of an ATM, so they can't have an incredible library of games there. They're going to limit it to the newest and most popular releases, which is fucking fine by me, because those are the ones you can never find at Blockbuster anyways.
Well, but, you know, that's a cool idea. Redbox is going to make a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to be rolling in money with this, because $2 a day, the thing about Redbox is... DVDs, when they first come out, unless you reserve them ahead of time, it's impossible to get a new DVD.
Oh, at a Redbox?
At a Redbox, yeah.
Really?
So I can't imagine games being any different than that. You're going to have to reserve them ahead of time, which is not hard to do. I mean, it's very easy to do. But but they will be checked out all the time. And I got to imagine that people are going to keep games longer than, you know, they keep movies. So at $2 a day...
Yeah, I mean, you think so at $2 a day? See, I could see this working on a lot of levels. I work downtown, and I could. There's a Redbox right about a block away from my office.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could pop on over there before I head home, get myself a game that I didn't want to buy and rent it and try it out, and bring it back in the next couple of days. You know, boom, boom. Don't gotta drive out to a Blockbuster. Don't gotta worry about. GameFly, and if the Redbox doesn't have it, well then okay, you know, I don't need to have a subscription service. I can just do it. I think Netflix should start to get a little worried about Redbox. I mean, they are the chief competitor. Netflix is now. Redbox hasn't reached that level yet, where they're the chief competitor for Netflix,
mm-hmm.
but it goes the other way. And if you start offering more services like video game rentals that Netflix just does not or cannot offer, then I think Redbox becomes a much more enticing service to use. And like you were saying, I mean, you said it as a con, as in you have to reserve whatever hot new release movie comes out to get your hands on it. But I would think that is even a pro, because that's the kind of stuff you can't do with a service like Gamefly or with a store like Blockbuster. You can't reserve the rental of a game. And if you can at a Redbox,
I've never used Gamefly, so I'm not sure how that works. But I know with Netflix you can reserve them before they come out.
But that's movies,
right?
And then you can what you can do with Gamefly is you can save it into your queue, but you basically have to game the system. And I've tried Gamefly before, and I've never really had any success with it. But you have to game the system in the sense that you have to either time it so that you send the game back, like your game that you have in your hand back, like right at the exact right time,
mm-hmm.
to get the new game that you wanted, or send everything back and empty your queue until that one comes back, and then maybe you'll get it. If you're it's sort of like at the airport when you have airline miles, and like there's people that you know get bumped up to first class before you would,
yeah,
because they fly a lot more with Delta or whatever. It's the same way with Gamefly, except for I think that's more based on tenure of membership. If a ton of people have it saved in their queue to be sent to them, it's a matter of tenure who gets it first. It doesn't matter when you reserved it at all. It just matters how long you've been with the service. So if you can just do it right at a Redbox, that's great. Just walk in the next day when it's there and grab it and go. And at $2 a day, you know, that can add up. For sure, but it seems like the perfect one for like a quick hit for like a weekend deal.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's probably going to cost. It's a little bit. It'll end up being about the same as going to Blockbuster, but not mm-hmm. have to deal with fucking Blockbuster,
right?
Because right. that place is one of the worst places I've ever experienced.
Wow.
I mean, I'm a little jaded because I was an employee there, but
oh, I see.
Yeah, there was a whole court thing and all that, but
holy shit!
Fuck Blockbuster!
Wow, goddamn, man!
Go Redbox!
All right, well, let's move right along. Then let's get out of this sore spot. So speaking of Netflix, they are fine. So as I understood it, Netflix had an exclusivity deal with Xbox 360 for a year. They were exclusively going to be on Xbox 360, not on PlayStation 3 or Wii, for a year. And then they had a further exclusivity deal with Xbox 360 for their discless service, in the sense that you had to have a disc with the Wii and the PS3
right.
for a year after it came out on those systems. I mean, a lot of people were like, it's a hardware thing, they can't run it. That was never the issue. It was a licensing thing. They were beholden to a contract by Microsoft that they were going to be the only provider that could offer it without a disc for 2 years. And now those 2 years are up, and Netflix has gone discless on the PS3 and is going discless on the Wii. And so anybody who doesn't have a 360, like my man Micah on the show here, can now watch Netflix on, is provided you have Netflix, can watch Netflix on your PS3 or on your Wii, the streaming stuff.
Yeah, you know what? I left my Netflix when I left my wife. Hey-o!
Was that part of the agreement or something? Was that in the was that in the settlement?
No, I just left everything I had so I couldn't afford it.
There you go. But yeah, that's what it is, man. I unfortunately, man, there's nothing that Netflix can do to change the fact that the Wii and the PS3 don't have party chat, and they don't have Netflix parties, which is the best goddamn thing about Netflix, because we get on there and we do bad movie drinkies, and it's the most fucking fun thing you can possibly do on Netflix.
I really wish so badly that I could do that. That, I mean, if I had the money to get a 360, I would, just to do that.
You will come over here on a Saturday and we will do it, and it will be fucking awesome.
What are you doing Saturday?
What's that?
What are you doing Saturday?
Saturday we got a, you know, you got, you're doing what I'm doing, man. We're going to Halloween parties.
Oh shit, that's right. That's this weekend.
Yeah, so this is Halloween weekend. So it's not going to be this Saturday, but maybe next Saturday. We'll figure that shit out.
Drinky, either way.
Yeah, it's great. It's just great. But, I mean, this, in the end, though, I kind of wanted to ask you what you thought would have a bigger impact, the Netflix, discless Netflix on the Wii or on the PS3. It seems like almost a slam dunk that it would be more impactful on the Wii just because of market share, right?
You know, I don't think, to be honest with you, I don't think it's that big of news in the first place.
Okay.
I think that Netflix, I mean, like Redbox, with their renting games, Netflix is going to see a jump in profits. But with me, when I had it, and had the disc for the PS3, it really wasn't that big of a deal.
Right.
Like, not having a disc would be something that had happened when I had it for PS3, I'd be like, oh, that's cool, and wouldn't really have thought much of it. But that being said, obviously the Wii has got a much, much larger user base.
Right.
So there's going to be a lot more people using it. That's just, you know, the way it works. So obviously the Wii is going to have the bigger impact, but for me, as somebody who was using it on the PS3 with the disc, not having to use the disc is not that big a deal.
Yeah, it's tough for me to say, because you would think automatically Netflix would be a bigger deal on the Wii just because of how many people have Wiis as opposed to how many people have PS3s. But you start taking things into consideration, like the fact that a lot of people bought PlayStation 3s for the purpose of being media players.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody bought a Wii for that purpose, you know?
Yeah.
You just sort of have it, and if it has Netflix on it, well, then great. Also, the Wii doesn't do high definition, and Netflix streams a lot of stuff in high definition. You can't take advantage of that on the Wii.
That's true. That's a pretty good point. Although, from what I've experienced, the high definition on the Netflix streaming is not wonderful.
Well, let me tell you what not to judge it by. What not to judge it by is by the bad movie Drinky Drinky, because generally every movie that we watch is a total pile of shit that they wouldn't bother putting in HD anyways.
Right.
So there's a few out there that are pretty good looking, and it usually is wholly dependent on your internet connection. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that a lot of people that have Wiis just aren't that savvy.
That's another good point.
That you would have to go and find in, like, the Wii Shop channel, probably. Just like everything else, you got to go find in the Wii Shop channel, even if it's free, before you can start using it. And I think if you were going to be interested in Netflix streaming, you probably are already using it on something else.
Could be.
There's so many devices out there that do this now. You know, a lot of Blu-ray players do it. The PlayStation, obviously, the 360 does it. There's TVs that do it just straight out of the TV. If you were going to be interested in Netflix streaming, you probably already got something that'll fit the bill. And I'm with you, man. I just don't know how big of a deal this is. It seems like, well, okay, now you have however many tens of 20s of 30s of millions more households and devices that have Netflix streaming.
Yeah.
But the ones that were going to use it probably already had it anyways.
Well, it seems like the type of thing where they pretty much had to do this is the only direction they could go in this area. So, I mean, it kind of seems like the thing that if they wouldn't have done it, they probably would have gotten complaints about it. So,
of course.
And when I say complaints, I mean a lot of complaints. Obviously, people are going to complain about everything, but...
Right.
I think that it was just kind of logical. I don't think that they're surprising very many people from doing this.
No, and I guess the point is that it seems like big news. It seems like a big deal. Not really sure it's that big of a deal.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's gonna do it for Digital Desk. We're gonna go on into the game bang.
Game bang. It's fantastic.
It is fantastic. You like that? We almost named the show Game Bang.
Boy, I have to imagine that was tough to vote against.
Yeah, it was Farva's call, man. We were all set to call it the Game Bang, and he was like, he was worried that we would get some Google hits or whatever internet searches that maybe we didn't really want in the first place.
I can't believe Farva would be concerned about that.
I know. I was shocked that he was the voice of reason there. Okay, this is the Game Bang, and we are both game banging the shit out of the same game, aren't we, man? We are both game banging Fallout New Vegas.
We're double teaming it.
Hell yeah, that's a true game bang right there. So we are game banging Fallout New Vegas, and I'm really enjoying my time with it, man. I'm having a good time with it. Now, Farva talked about it last week in the care package. Just his initial impressions with it, and I think he might have been jaded by the fact that, I don't know if you heard last week, we were talking and Farva said that he got stuck because he hadn't been saving it every so often. He'd just been relying on the autosave.
Uh-huh.
And he got into a situation he wasn't quite prepared for, where he was facing down about 8 or 9 dudes.
Yep. Oh my god, like that exact same thing happened to me fucking yesterday.
No, oh man.
I got out of it, but it was a pain in the ass.
It's the worst.
I felt
it's
like I had worst. To trick the game to get out of it, but yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, I think his initial impressions might have been a little bit jaded by it, because I've not run into that, and because of his story that he relayed on to me, and I remember what happened to me in Fallout 3, something very similar.
Uh-huh.
I've been using a rotating save system on my own. Like, I've been saving in save slot 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and I'm on the computer. I'm playing it on the PC, not on the 360, so there's no limit to the save slots.
Right.
It says there's 1,000 available to me,
uh-huh.
And so I've just been going right up, and I'm up on, like, save slot 15 now, so I can go all the way back to my first manual save if I wanted to. But just in case I get myself in any tricky situations, I'm saving it every half an hour or every hour or so.
Well, I think that's a good idea with a game like this anyway, because it's got a lot of glitches in it, and Fallout 3 did also, and Oblivion did also.
No doubt.
And I think in games like that that just tend to have those issues, it's good to have multiple saves. I had a good friend who she would never ever play a game with anything less than 3 separate save files that she would alternate through, no matter what the game was. So it's something that's a bad policy. I mean, well, it's something that you don't really think about or don't really care about doing, but if your save gets corrupted, it's like, why even bother starting over, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I got lucky when I was playing Dead Rising, the first one on 360, because I don't know what it was. Either I was extremely patient, because that was my first foray into next-gen gaming, and I was like, oh, this is so much fun and all this stuff, and I was ignoring all the little problems with it and all the big problems with it.
Yeah.
Either that was the case, or I was just like some kind of savant at Dead Rising, because I didn't have any problems with it, despite their horrible save system. And they had one save slot in that fucking game, and you had to use the bathroom, you had to find a bathroom, and you had a time limit for everything. It was like the definition of poor save management in that game. But I guess I was okay at it. But playing a game like that now, it would just make me want to throw the controller through a wall.
Well, I mean, that reminds me of it's a gripe with Demon's Souls. I mean, it's the type of thing where you have to go for an hour or two, and if you die, you start all over. And I mean, you can save and you can start at save spots, but they are so far few and far between that, like, when you die, it's just like, fuck it, I'll come back to it in a month.
That's crazy. I mean, I think there's a running theme of what kind of game that is, and it would be Japanese.
Well, I have a feeling it's in there for difficulty. You know, it's hard, and it is fucking hard. I mean, it's hard it'd be hard with a game that you could save whenever you want. It'd still be hard, but you know, to have that added on. And I think Dead Rising is kind of the same way, where at least when you get to a boss, because fuck those bosses in Dead Space or in Dead Rising.
I know. Anyway, so that I mean, that's kind of, those are kind of games that you are kind of stuck with their save system. Yeah. I think the point is that Fallout is not that kind of game. If you don't do it manually, you're using that kind of save system where it's few and far between, and you might fucking save yourself into a problem and all that shit. Mm-hmm. But if you're saving it manually, you can control that, and you can control the whole experience that way. I think that's great, and as long as you're active and you're aware of what you're doing, you can improve your experience tenfold with this game and not run into any of those gigantic frustrating situations. But I've been really enjoying Fallout New Vegas. I have been finding it maybe not, certainly not as innovative as Fallout 3, and the game world hasn't been as breathtaking, I guess. But I mean, that's tough to match what happened in Fallout 3 when you first step out of the vault.
Right.
It's tough to match that kind of experience and all the new experiences that you're having with Fallout 3. It's very much the same kinds of experiences that you're having here. You know, when you step out of where you start in Fallout New Vegas, it's they try to do the same thing, not quite as effective. But outside of that, I think everything about this game is wittier, tighter, and just a lot more fun than Fallout. I think the world itself and the characters and the way they treat everything in this world is more fun than Fallout 3. Fallout 3 just seemed, I mean, it was beautiful in its own way, but it was miserable.
I think that, I really enjoyed Fallout 3. I liked it a lot. I absolutely loved it when it came out. New Vegas, I was very apprehensive about, especially after playing it at PAX.
Right.
I got to play it at PAX, and playing it, I don't know why, but they stuck you in, like, just in the middle of nowhere at PAX, and there was nothing to do except run around and kill a couple of things, and like, I, you know, I'm sitting there playing, and I'm like, really, this is it?
Yeah.
And so when I played, you know, the actual game, I was very pleasantly surprised to have. Honestly, I think this is the most fun I've had with a game this year.
Wow! Wow! And I mean, did you play? Well, I guess maybe you didn't play Mass Effect 2.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, no. That's always my pivot point for games. Maybe this one will best that one. Maybe. Haven't yet.
If I had one gripe with Fallout New Vegas, it would be the actual strip of New Vegas.
Okay.
And the reason for that being is there are two games you can play in Vegas at every casino, and that's blackjack and roulette. That's it.
Okay. That's all there is?
And there's slots.
Okay.
That's all you can do in Vegas. And for the whole game to be revolving around that, that was really disappointing. And I guess it leaves it open for downloaded content possibilities.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then honestly, fuck you, Bethesda. But
I don't think that's the case, man. I think I'm feeling pretty good, because that leaves it open for user developed mods on the PC.
On the PC, yeah, no, absolutely,
yeah. But I mean, you can also play that caravan game. Have you played that caravan card game?
I looked. I skimmed the rules, and no, I haven't played it.
Yeah, I know. I haven't played it because I haven't even gotten to Vegas. I haven't gotten to the Strip yet. I've like got like three cards, because I wondered what that was, why every shop merchant is selling playing cards of some kind, and I'm just like, oh, okay, I've got like a three of clubs and like a two of diamonds and like a jack of spades.
I actually
need a full deck of cards to play this game.
I got a whole deck from somebody. Somebody gave me a whole deck. I don't remember where it was. Towards the very beginning of the game, but The one thing I love about this game is you're standing it with the different gangs and the individual towns.
Mm-hmm.
I think they did a really good job with that. Probably better than any game I've ever seen before this. As far as your being liked by some people and hated by others, a lot of games have, you know, like a good and evil type thing, but they don't really alter the game.
Right.
And I feel like in New Vegas, it really does. You miss out. No matter what you do, you miss out on stuff, because if you're liked by these people, you miss out on stuff you could do with these people. And the amount of things that you can do depending on who you like and what choices you make is really, really cool. They did an absolutely fantastic job in that aspect. Something that I don't think any game up to this point has been able to do, except maybe in a Heavy Rain might have come close. But yeah, I've been extremely impressed with that aspect of the game.
It does strike a pretty impressive balance. Usually with this type of game, with that type of mechanic, you can almost become universally liked across the entire world if you do it. Like, generally, the things that you do to help yourself in one town or with one faction have no effect on your standing with the other faction. But in this one, every action that you make has a reaction, positive and negative.
Right.
Because every time that you swing one way with a town, you're swinging another way against the faction that you're basically fighting with for that town.
Mm-hmm.
There's early game examples where you might be fending off a bandit attack and you become an absolute, like the absolute demon of that bandit faction. They completely despise you, and they will seek you out in the wasteland, in the open, and try to take you down with a bunch of dudes. Like, they may just roll up on you.
Well, and not only that, but every single faction you can become a part of, and you can get missions and interact with them if they like you.
Sure.
And, obviously, I mean, you couldn't do all of them in one game, because liking one, you know, they're enemies with another one. So getting in with one gang will actually pit you against other gangs just right there.
Yeah.
So it's definitely got a lot of replayability, because there are so many ways you can go about this game.
Right, and I've liked in this game. I'm liking also the shooting mechanic. It's a lot tighter. You can look down the sights of your gun. One gripe that I do have. I mean, it's just a gripe with the format of this game entirely. You can look down the sights at something and be firing right on it and still miss, because it's still an RPG and there's still an element of shooting and missing because of your stats. It's a random dice roll kind of thing. Even if you're looking right down the sights at something, you can miss it. That's pretty annoying when you know you're firing right on something and you're still missing. But it's a hell of a lot better than it was in Fallout 3.
Yeah.
It's a lot tighter shooting mechanic, and you feel like you're in a lot more control of it. And then, you know, as soon as you've unloaded, you know, however many shots you want, you can just switch it right over to VATS and give it a crack out of that if you can't hit your target. And it strikes a pretty good balance between the two types of combat.
It does.
Better than it was before.
Yeah, I was going to say, they definitely upped it from Fallout 3. I love looking down the sights. Some of the guns you get are just awesome.
Yeah.
And being able to do more than just, like, the slight zoom in, you know,
uh-huh.
that Fallout 3 did, it adds a lot to the game.
So how many hours have you dropped onto it?
Oh, probably 15 or so.
Oh, wow. You're really grinding through it, huh? Is that just your game that you have been on these past, like, week or so?
For the most part, yeah. That and I always play the show.
Oh, yeah. That's an easy one to go back to. So I think the point is that Fallout New Vegas is not a rent. It is a buy. Don't listen to the dickbag that fucked himself into a corner from last week. listen to a couple of guys who kind of know the score on Fallout New Vegas and know that you need to use rotating save slots and manually save your game every once in a while so you have a backup to go to. This is a huge open world game, and there's going to be bugs. There have been bugs. There's been huge bugs from what I've heard. I haven't run into any of them myself.
I've ran into a couple, but yeah.
Like I the worst I heard was somebody who had a required kill monster or human or something like that that was stuck in a wall, that was stuck clipping into a wall, and they couldn't shoot it. So that would suck some big time balls.
I'm in the middle of getting, like, I just got a mission to go talk to somebody that I've already killed, so I'm not sure how that's gonna work out. But
yeah, that would be probably an example of a mission breaking bug. But that's the kind of stuff that's going to happen in a game like this. Now, there's a case to be made that maybe they should have delayed it, and maybe they should have waited a few months and gotten all this stuff ironed out, and made it a completely polished and tight experience. But from a game fan perspective, I could be right on board with them delaying this game. I got no problem with that. But
you know what, though,
I get it.
I think that a game like this, as open as it is, as big as it is, as many different things as you can do, there's going to be bugs.
Yeah.
And I think that's just how it is, and I think you just have to live with them. And most of the time, honestly, when there's bugs, most of the time, they're actually pretty entertaining.
Yeah, that's true.
But, like you said, buy, don't rent. For me, so far, this is my game of the year this year.
Great, yeah. I'm looking forward to putting some more time into it. I'll probably send this one down the plank when I'm through it, but it may not be for another fucking 4 months by the time I'm done with this game. I just finished Enslaved, and... Oh, I want to talk about one other game real quick. I mean, I know I'm already breaking the rule of the game bang, but there is a game that has got me so goddamn addictive, and it is an iPhone game. And the game, I don't know if you've heard of it, it's kind of a niche thing that I've been hearing about on podcasts, and I went and picked it up. The game is called Game Dev Story.
I have not heard of it. I have an Android. Okay. Sorry.
Well, maybe it'll come out there, but you can hear. I mean, I'm sure you could hear about it or read about it. Game Dev Story is. I've never played Farmville or Frontierville, those things like on Facebook or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But I would imagine Game Dev Story is something like that, except you are running a game development studio.
I think you're a fucking liar, and you play Farmville and Frontierville all the time. And when you saw that Game Dev Story was just like that, you jumped on board.
You think I've been playing Farmville? Yeah, that's the one I've been playing. dude, this game is fucking crazy, all right? You hire a staff of game developers, coders, writers, graphic designers, sound engineers, and you start off as a really small company, and you can start designing PC games because there's no development, there's no licensing cost there.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Then there's consoles that come out. With consoles, they take up a bigger gaming market share, as consoles do, but there's a licensing fee. You have to pay some odd $100,000 up front to get a dev kit.
Okay.
And then you make games, and you make more money off of those games. And then consoles' life cycles pass, and a new console comes out,
really?
And you have to get a license for that one. And it's funny, they had these little throwbacks in there, like Nintendo is one of the console makers, and the IES is the first one they come out with, and then it's like the GameKid. It follows the actual life cycle of the consoles that have actually come out.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's really funny. And you get to, you take two aspects of a game, like you can make it an action game, or you can make it like an adventure or a mystery game, and then you choose the type of character that's in that. So it's like you can make an action game with robots, or an action game with ninjas, or, you know, you can make a puzzle game with a detective in it or something like that. And you choose and you mix and match all this shit, and then you put it through a dev cycle, and you develop the game. And your coders take a shot at it, your writers take a shot at it, your graphic guys take a shot at it, and there's gaming conventions that come every year. There's There's gaming award shows every year.
That seems very deep for an iPhone game.
It's incredibly deep, and I will tell you that I have a lot of people at my office that have iPhones that play iPhone games, and I can tell you for sure none of these people will like this game. It is a game meant for video gamers who are interested in the industry, who are interested in how games are actually made. It's a game made for me.
Right.
And that's about it. But hey, you know what? I'll take it.
Totally.
You make a game tailor-made for me, that's perfect. I don't fucking care. Anytime I'm away, anytime I have seven... It takes about 7 real-world minutes to develop a game.
Okay.
And you get to name the game, and then you see how it sells, and you get to see review scores. It goes for review. You get fan letters and stuff, and you see how your popularity has increased because of the game. If your game sells well enough, they ask you to make a sequel. And you level up your staff, you hire more staff, you move into a bigger building. Eventually, you can start developing your own console. You can become a console developer and get paid the licensing fees that other developers want to put their games on your console.
I'm really interested. I'd like to see them come out with this on the Droid so I could give it a try.
That's the thing. I don't know how well this game is doing because it is such a niche game. It is such a game that is made for only video gamers, and it seems like the kind of game they would come out with on the Android, not the iPhone.
Wait a second. Can you repeat that? Who's it made for?
It's a game that's...
A game made for gamers?
Yeah, dude. I mean,
You're absolutely right. In this market today, those tend to not do as well.
That's the fucking truth. And the iPhone is such a pool for games not made for gamers.
Yeah.
I just don't know how well it's going to do. And I don't know if it's going to generate a different version of it on the Android, or maybe there'll be a browser version of it. I mean, this let me tell you something. This would be a game that would be perfect for a browser in the same way that Farmville and Frontierville have made crazy boatloads of money like that.
Right.
But it would be a game that would be perfect for browsers of video gamers and nobody else, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the sad but awesome truth of it. So, you know, being the guy with the iPhone that has the game, I'm happy as I could be. I wish I had higher hopes for its global success so it could come out to more people. But
yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen. Too bad, though. If you have an iPhone, take a look at Game Dev Story. That's going to do it for the Game Bang. We're going to go on to something a little bit special. I told you guys last week that even though Farva isn't here, you're going to get a little bit of Farva. Well, here we go. This was a podcast that Aladouche, me, and Farva recorded in my office. My actual real-life office, the three of us sitting around on the Sunday of PAX that never really came out. It was intended to come out as a Sarcastic Gamer community cast, but it never really saw the light of day over there.
That's because I fucked up. I messed that up.
Hey, that's all right. We get more content into this thing because we're going to just take this thing and just cram it haphazardly with non sequitur and just fucking cram it right smack dab in the middle of this episode. Here we go.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You are now listening to the show. You are about to find out just how tough the SG community can really be. So sit back, relax, crack open an ice-cold f***ing beer, and have a listen. Or you can just go f*** yourself.
Hello and welcome to a very special f*** show. I'm here with a couple of guys from the Talking Ship podcast, Paradigm 13, which is now known as Fisherman, and Chicken X, which is now known as Farva. How's it going, guys?
Sorry, I just want to make it awkward like no one was here.
So I'm here doing this podcast by myself. No, we're at PAX 2010. This is a special, extremely ghetto, last-minute, end-of-the-weekend podcast. I'm going to interview these guys, basically, and see what they thought were the highs and lows and everything in between in PAX. So, Farva, I'm going to start with you. What do you think was the best part about PAX?
For me, the best part about PAX was getting to meet Esmeralda. I have, when she first showed up on the site, I was just like, wow, this girl has something special. I'd met Jax before, and Jax was special, but I don't like being around a woman I can outdrink. Now, Esmeralda can't drink yet, so for me, there's still that hope. It's like something I can reach to, and so that was probably the biggest highlight. Other than that, honestly, it was probably the Paxtra Life Party. That thing was the most fun I've had here. It was what I was most looking forward to, and it definitely delivered. So,
all right, I'm gonna talk about the Paxtra Life Party and ask you guys a couple things specific to that in a few minutes. But first, Mr. Fisherman, why don't you let us know what was your favorite part of PAX so far? Well, I guess of PAX.
It was the Paxtra Life Party for me too. It comes ahead of watching Machete last night, but and by a pretty wide margin too. But those were definitely the two highlights for me.
I got to agree also, the party was amazing. The fact that many people showed up to support, you know, what the cause that we're going for is just really incredible. The vibe in the place was just amazing. Everybody was helping out. You guys fucking paid $30 to be there and then ended up working all night. And I wrote an article, and I'm sorry, man, I didn't mention your name about helping out because we were in different places the whole night and I just never saw you. But the amount of people that just helped out from the site that were there, it was just incredible. The other thing that I wanted to point out is just being around the city, downtown Seattle, with everybody from the community that, you know, that showed up, all the site admins and forum members and moderators and stuff like that, and just being able to sit down and have beers with each other. And I mean, this is Sunday afternoon, and I haven't been sober since Thursday afternoon. It's been quite a weekend. So, Farva, why don't you just say something entertaining so I can come up with the question for Fisherman?
Okay, well, one of the things that was brought up by Undead Dog was the fact that this was a kind of gathering of like minds and interests, and it's one of these deals where I now that I know these people, these are the kind of people I want to hang out with, and it's almost painful to know I've got to pick up and go back home, you know, and the closest person I have is Dave, and he's 4 hours away. So that's like saying, okay, you know, I want a buffet, and I'm getting, like, the parsley, and the part I have to, like, run a marathon to get it. So it's a little disappointing, but for that to be the low light, that I met so many great people, and I'm not going to be able to hang out with them on a regular basis, I mean, really, f*** me for being a baby.
No, I hear you on that, but yeah, here, Fisherman, what do you got to say?
It's a little surreal to get the internet friend translated into a real friend and like see these people in real life and put voices to just faces to voices and actually hang out with them. But like you sort of fall into your roles even in real life when you get together with these guys. You know, Doc is obviously the facilitator. He's always running the show, and you know, it's good, it's fun, and it's interesting. And you realize why you're friends with these guys online, because you're definitely friends with them in real life too.
Yeah, no, I couldn't believe how easy it was to just kind of sit down and be able to connect with everybody. Like, I really thought it was going to be awkward. I met fucking Plugel on Friday. How fucked up is that? I never thought, dude. I mean, that's like a huge thing crossed off my bucket list. Meeting Plugel, and he didn't creep me out either.
No. One of the things with Plugel, actually, Plugel gave me a reason to, this whole deal gave me a reason to, like, be on Twitter. Because, like, when we got here Thursday night, we were trying to find Doc and Dave and Lana. We were just trying to find people and be like, okay, where's everyone at? Where are we supposed to go? We want to meet these people. And so we kept, like, chasing them. We'd go to point A, and they'd be at B. So we'd go to B, and they'd go back to A. And it was just, like, this runaround, rug-a-rigger kind of thing. But actually walking the showroom floor, the first person I recognized when I was just walking around was Plugel, and that's because he had tweeted his outfit like a month before, and I saw the outfit, and I'm like, oh my God, that's Plugel! You know, I happened to be walking with Undead Dog, he saw the Sarcastic Gamer shirt, came over, talked to us. Not really nice guy. So, surprisingly normal-ish.
Yeah, you wouldn't think so. You know, I gotta say, like, the actual showroom floor was probably my least favorite thing of the entire weekend. And I saw some cool games and stuff, but, like, I was so much more entertained by going out and having, you know, eating and having drinks with all you guys than I was actually in there fucking playing new video games, which is awesome. I got to play some really cool shit, but, yeah. Like, seriously, if I could just, you know, if we all could just do this more often, I mean, that would be fantastic. You all should move to Seattle.
Agreed. So
everybody.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Everybody move to Seattle.
Love the rain. Farva does so good when he's wet. Seriously, I smell like wet dog as is. Quick question. What was your favorite game at PAX?
Brink. Easily Brink. Well, I think for one, I had a good idea of kind of what their concept was before I played it, but having the guy, I don't remember what his position was that was showing off the game, but you know, the way he explained it with having two opposing sides, neither of them are good guys, neither of them are bad guys, it's just kind of the point of view, and you play through a campaign from one side or the other, and if you can play just single player, you can play cooperative multiplayer, or you can play competitive multiplayer. And even if you play competitive multiplayer, you're still playing through your campaign. And, you know, you'll have so many actual players from the opposite side as enemies as you're going through the campaign. And I think that is just the coolest fucking thing in like a shooter game. And I cannot believe that that's never been thought of before. So, you know, the innovation that they came out with that was just awesome.
That's Bethesda for you, man. I didn't get a chance to play Brink. My favorite game that I ran into there was Bastion, still. I had time to think about it, and, you know, we loved playing the Assassin's Creed multiplayer. That blew me away. Bastion's going to be the Xbox Live game of the year next year. When it releases. If it releases next year. They said they were about halfway done with it, so it may not even come out next year. But that's something to keep for everyone to keep their eyes on. It's a game that is without peer. There's not a game like that out there right now.
I hadn't even played. I haven't even heard of it, to be honest with you. Farva, what was your favorite game out there?
I would have to say my favorite game was actually tied up, but it was two games because they were two totally separate things. The first one was the Kinect, the Xbox 360 Kinect dancing game. I forget what it's called, but it was more fun than I thought it would be. And for those of you who have not met me, I'm kind of a portly, roundish-shaped, oblong-like fellow. And for me to be dancing out there, it was embarrassing but still fun. I see it being the next drunken party game. I really do. And I think, plus, you know, like my daughter would love playing that. So I think that will be a system seller. The other game that I was really blew me away, and it was the first game I played, and maybe I'm a little more amped on it because it was the first game I played in my first thing at PAX, but was NBA Jam on the Wii. I loved a lot of the games I played, but I adored NBA Jam.
Yeah.
The controls were so intuitive. I mean, the only complaint I have with that game is the fact that it was fun to be playing four players on the same TV and talking shit and, you know, like, oh, like I just dunked on you and the rim's on fire and they're laying on the ground. I'm like, yeah, you know, your mother never loved you and whatever. You know, that was what made it fun. And because the Wii doesn't have that kind of online multiplayer, like voice speak, that could be a kind of a detriment to the game. But again, as a, you know, two people sitting on a couch, it's a great game. Even like me and Fish, we're both going to play it, and then we're just going to hook up our Xbox 360 mics and jump in a party and just do it that way. So ultimately, that was the worst thing. So real quick, Fish, you got anything?
Yeah, I was just going to say that was the first game that we played, actually. Well, it wasn't the first game that we played. We played something else, but that was the first game that we really took some time with. And we played these fellas, and I mean, I don't know. Man, we podcast together, so we play games together a lot, so maybe we had we were kind of more in sync, but man, those poor fellas, we just smoked them. We fucking tore them apart. It was 61-31, and that was the final score of our game. And we were like, we were playing defense, we were playing offense, we were blocking shots, setting each other up. It was like the Harlem Globetrotters out there, and we were just killing them.
All right, so next question I have for you guys. Actually, Fish, I just love the melodious sound of your voice and want to hear you keep talking. What was your least favorite game at PAX?
Honestly, Fallout New Vegas was a big disappointment for me. I went over there, stood in line, and played it a little bit, and I will give it the benefit of the doubt because I loved Fallout 3. I will give it the benefit of the doubt and say maybe I was in an area in that demo, in that pre-alpha demo, where I wasn't supposed to be, but there was just, it was just desolate. I mean, they set you up in this demo with all these guns, this huge arsenal of guns. There's a machine gun fucking grenade launcher, for God's sakes, and there's nothing to shoot it at. I'm sitting there unloading a clip of grenades into just the wasteland because I wanted to see what would happen, but I had nothing to actually shoot at. I want to get into town. It was nighttime. Maybe things are happening in the daytime because they have the actual day-night cycles. I don't know. I will definitely give this game a shot. It's just this demo that they had here at PAX didn't inspire a whole lot of confidence in me.
No, I understand. Yeah, I loved Fallout 3, and this is a big one for me. I actually didn't get to play the demo, but when I heard your intake on that, I wept openly for 3-4 minutes maybe, and collected myself and moved on. So, Aladouche here, please, what was your most disappointing game here at PAX?
Well, I wanted to say first really quick that Fallout New Vegas, I got to fight a couple of guys, but I know what you're talking about because they do start you out in kind of like a desolate area, and I think that was probably a bad choice on Bethesda's part about what to showcase, you know, in this game. And it may be just because they don't want to give certain things away, but I mean, when I saw f***ing grenade launcher machine gun grenade launcher, I was in love. I was just like, I can't believe this exists. But I got to give him a benefit of the doubt and assume it's going to be good.
Well, admittedly, like if you think about it, the big selling point on this game is the fact that it's being set up in Vegas. And, you know, having Vegas, for those of you who aren't familiar with the game, was not completely destroyed like the rest of the United States. So there's more, you know, things are still working. You still got electricity in place. You still got power and AC in this. And so the dynamics are different as far as the world. And so to then stick you in something you've already seen and played 100 times, I thought was a mistake on their part, really. So
no, I agree. It was a bad decision. But as far as my most disappointing game, it has to be Epic Mickey. I really
I'm getting out of here. I'm shutting this door.
I really didn't. I was bored when I was playing through their demo, and well, he really left.
Yeah, he's really left, yeah. I've been waiting for Epic Mickey for 6 months. I loved Epic Mickey. And as soon as we're done recording, I am going to beat you with everything in this office.
It was really hard. It's really hard to find a most disappointing game, mainly because the games that I went to try were the ones that I was interested in. And I was very pleasantly surprised by having so many of my expectations met and exceeded. But with Epic Mickey was really one that I didn't know anything about, and I just saw it, and Nintendo had this huge fucking, you know, display and everything with it, and I saw it, and I was just kind of, I mean, it was neat and stuff, but I wouldn't ever play it probably for more than 10 minutes at a time.
Okay. Yeah, no, I liked Epic Mickey. I found the humor in it. Thought it was a rather dark game, but I know I'm more into the there's going to be a light side and a dark side, and the Oswald character. I don't know if you know anything about that. So those are reasons that, you know, it's the history of the game that really brought it up. My biggest complaint with Epic Mickey was there's no sprint. And there are times when you've got to cover a lot of ground just to get from point A to point B. There's nothing really going on. And it takes 2-3 minutes to do that. And it's like, if you could sprint, you know, or something like that, that would have been better. And I asked the guy about putting that in the game, but they're releasing it in like a month or two. And so I don't think they're going to listen to me, which is a mistake. So
They should listen to you.
Most certainly they should listen to me. So
Just that point, though, is an important one, that the devs for these games are right there on the show floor for not just for media folks to talk to, but for everybody to talk to. I played that game Bastion that I was talking about. The guy that got done right before me, he sat there and talked to the developer, the executive creative director of the game, who was standing right there just answering questions for the entire time I was playing it, which was like 20 minutes, and just asking him questions, talking about the dev cycle, talking about where they are, seeing when it's going to get released. Like, he was basically interviewing him, but he wasn't really interviewing him for anything. He was just curious and wanted to know and wanted to give him his thoughts on the game. And he was like, you know, so I when I was playing this part, here's what I was feeling, and I really hope that, you know, the idea of building the level as you go through it carries through and has a deeper story impact and all that. And the guy's just listening, giving him feedback and stuff. That's part of what makes PAX great. I mean, the best part of PAX is the community interaction, especially for guys like us where we're part of communities and we can put faces to voices and names to forum tags and all that shit. But this the next best thing really is how open and how accessible everything is at PAX and everybody. And you can actually find out more about the games that you love and the games you will love.
No, agreed. So not to show that we are quite benevolent here at the F*** show, we have a guest question. So please, go ahead.
Guest question. Thanks. Thanks for shooting that my way. I want to know, and this might fall under you for everything you've already just been explaining, but was there a game that for you guys that was surprisingly good? Something that you weren't expecting to be good, but...
Yeah, easily NBA Jam. I mean, that's why it blew me away. It was just it's the perfect. You know, every so often you get like a game for nostalgia's sake, then you play it and it's like, what? I was a retarded kid. I don't know. I had brain damage. My parents didn't love me. They must have been touching me and abusing me, and I blocked it all out because this is horrible. You know, the nostalgia usually fucks with what I'm playing now. This game took nostalgia and perfectly brought it up into a new generation and a new setting and the new technology, and it superseded anything I would have imagined. So that was mine.
Yeah, that NBA Dead is NBA Jam is NBA Jam ass NBA Jam. That is exactly what you remember. It is the same. That when the announcer said "Boom Shakalaka," I think I blew my load right there. I think I blew it right there when he said "Boom Shakalaka."
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, he said that, and like three women in the lorry in the vicinity got pregnant. It was awesome. So, okay, quick question. We're going to do a quick rapid-fire thing. Hottest booth babes?
Need for Speed Hot Pursuit.
I don't know. Booth babes. I will say the chick at the door of the Duke Nukem thing was too big to be wearing what she was wearing. That's like the thing I remember the most. I don't remember like the hottest babe,
it's
though.
All tainted for you.
Yeah. I'm gonna go with the Gran Turismo 5. Me and Undead Dog got over there, and this cute little Asian chick was running it, and she was adorable, the sweetest little thing ever. So, best beer you had all weekend?
Oh well, Seattle's got the best beer in the world. Motherfucking Mac and Jacks.
Mac and Jacks.
I'm with you, man. Mac and Jack.
I don't drink beer, so I'm gonna go with the vodka and Red Bull. Okay.
Fox Sports.
Yeah, at Fox Sports, exactly. Funniest thing you heard me say all weekend?
To be honest with you, I really don't remember anything you've said.
I'll come up with something.
I hate you both. All right. Well, you know what?
Wait. The I will say, just because it was recent and I actually remember it, but the poem you made and read for the waitress at the, what was it,
Tap House, yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, for those of you, we were at the Tap House today. I met the guys for lunch, and I started hitting on the waitress. She was a little slow bringing us a drink, so I said if she hurried back, I'd write her a poem. And should I recite the poem?
Yeah.
You think? All right, listener, this is Roses are red, violets are blue. I suck at rhyming, but I will never want again be able to look at a sunset without thinking of your beautiful smile. And violets are still blue. Thank you.
That was good, just because I could feel the embarrassment falling off of her as she was standing there in front of like fucking eight of us or something at the table as you read that to her.
Yeah, that was awesome. So
that wasn't the first or the only time that happened either. When me and Jamie were walking with my man here on Thursday night, he saw some lady walking by, and he said, "You're beautiful and you walk with purpose." And it was just in the dead of night, and she just kept right on going.
So, okay, one final question for you guys. Favorite machete quote?
Machete don't text.
Dude, it's got to be it.
machete don't text. All right.
I just want to say the getting together with everybody going to see Machete was like another one of the coolest things that I did all weekend. I mean, it was – there were other people in the theater, and I'm sure they fucking hate all of us because we were assholes. But having like there was like 12 or 13 of us all there, and just bullshitting and fucking around through the entire movie. That was so fun.
Agreed. So, all right. Well, that's going to do it for the Fuck Show. This is Farve and Fisherman. Thank you again for our guest Isla Douche coming in and recording this with us. We'll be back, I think, next week with another rousing edition of the Fuck Show. So don't miss it.
All right, so I hope you guys enjoyed that. So we're going to go on into the care package. This is the Fisherman with a care package for you. I have brought the Fisherwoman along. My girlfriend Jamie is here, and she has been playing Fable 3. So what do you think of Fable 3 so far?
I think it's good. It's just very much Fable 2, but with a different story.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing a lot, is that they didn't change much from Fable 2, which is a bit of a disappointment. They put this one forward as a pretty big step forward, and it really doesn't seem... It seems to be that Fable 1 may still be the best of all three, and Fable 2 was not everything they hyped it up to be, but still a pretty major step forward for the franchise, being the first on the 360. And Fable 3, they hyped up as a huge step forward with a lot of improvements, but it sounds like maybe not so much.
Yeah, the graphics, I expected more of an advancement. Looking at the game compared to Fable 2, it's very, very similar. The mechanics are very similar. Very, very much hasn't changed. There's definitely, from Fable 1 to Fable 2, a bigger jump in changing and detail, but as I sink my teeth into the story is definitely compelling and interesting and getting me into it. It has similar attributes to the second Fable and how it started. You gotta get into the gang, gotta blend into the first challenge, but it's different, and so it's very interesting, and I'm interested to see how it progresses.
Yeah, that was pretty disappointing when I was watching you play, to see that one of the first missions was to put on bandit clothes and sneak into a bandit camp, because that was the first mission on, I think, the first one and the second. It's definitely the second one, and I think the first one as well. You think they might switch that up a little bit? They changed the entire direction of this one. In this one, you play as a member of the royal family who is not next in line for the throne, but the next of the next in line for the throne, right?
Yeah, I'm the king's, because I'm a woman, I'm the king's sister, so I'm the princess. And it's portraying me as an ancestor of the previous game. So it ties in quite well, but I am not in power. I am going to usurp the power.
Yeah. Like there's somebody in front of you in line for the throne, and the game focuses, at least in the early game, on that person being an evil person and you trying to usurp the power from them.
Correct. And then I have to go and collect, you know, support. And so my first support mission was to go to this mountain camp, this mountain village, where they're starving because of the rule of the king and how they're not, you know, getting food and they're not getting support. And I have three tasks. I'm not going to tell you what they are because, you know, you need to play. But there's three tasks. You got to go and, you know, do them. My one complaint is that it's kind of slow. I feel like Fable 2, I was able to get in and I died. There was a learning curve, certainly, but I did die. And as I died, I figured out how to play better. And this one, I have yet to die. And so that's a little frustrating for me as a player, because I'm not advancing my skills any, because I'm not learning.
Yeah, you're not putting into any tough situations up front. You're having a hard time. And yeah, I can see the look of the game and the feel of the game. It is exactly like Fable 2 from what I see. And what bothered me when I was watching, the I think almost the biggest gripe that I had in just watching, and I'm not playing, not yet anyways, I'm sure I will, is they have, from Fable 2, you had random jobs throughout the city to make money. And they were quick time events you were making swords, you were banging on some blacksmithing, you were cutting wood, but they were quick time events, timed things with a meter at the bottom to show you when to push a button to progress that on. And they're back, and they're no different.
There's a slight difference. You have to push buttons in a specific order this time, whereas last time you had to hit X at the exact moment that the cursor that's sliding along the bottom of the screen hit the middle. So I think that was a better timing, because you had one specific thing. This time it's like Guitar Hero, like you told me. I had to push specific buttons at a specific time in a color pattern. And so that's the difference there, but it is very similar. Same kind of quick time event. This one I was making pie, or I was playing a lute. Last time you were carving wood or making swords.
Storyline wise, it just doesn't seem to make sense to me. I understood it from last time when you were some up and coming grunt trying to make your way and rags to riches, but you're already set at riches in this game. You're already part of a higher class, and it seems like you going around the town making pies for people seems like a real big disconnect from, like, why would you need to do that to make money?
Well, they don't know that I'm the princess. I was in drag. I had a beard on and I had bandit clothes on. I think if I was in normal princess clothes doing this, I would understand. But seeing as I was in disguise because I was going off to start my next mission, I can kind of see, you know, helping out the town people earning money.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't understand why that would be why that would happen with a princess. Why she would be motivated to do that when she could just have money? You just have it because you're a part of the royal family. Yeah, you know, you don't need to be working for it and grinding and working your fingers to the bone and all that stuff. It seems like they put it in there just to have it in there for not a real good reason why.
I would disagree. There's a point to this. The reason you're in this town, you're going around getting this stuff, is because you're trying to earn the townspeople's, you know, support. And if they see you actually working and trying to help be part of this community, it ties into them wanting to support you farther down the road. So it might be frivolous to us, but it might be beneficial down the road towards earning support from the town.
Okay, well, that makes sense. That seems like a pretty good reason why you would do it. The other thing with this game is that you have the dog, and the dog is back, and the dog operates in no different. I think the whole point of this is that Fable 3 is every bit, and it's going to sound harsh, it sounds every bit like a rehash of Fable 2. It sounds like it could just be a DLC expansion pack, and it isn't. It's a full retail release. Leave it to you guys to determine whether that's worth the purchase price or not. But so for fans of Fable and fans of Fable 2, people who liked Fable 2, is this a good purchase? Do you think this thing has legs? Do you think it's worth maybe a Gamefly long rental deal? What would you suggest?
I think looking back, I was more excited for Fable 2 than I was for Fable 3. The differences between Fable 2 and Fable 1 were incredible. They got a dog, you could be a woman, there were definitely graphical changes. This one is, like Dave said, it's very much a DLC in content. It's very similar. There's hardly anything that's changed. I would say long rental. Unless you're absolutely sure that you're going to play it more often, more than once, you're going to try as a woman, going to try as a man, or try it as a good person or as a bad person. There's different routes there. But for me, I'm glad that we have it because I don't have to send it back because I can play with that. But for people who might not necessarily be avid fans that are interested, I would probably rent it.
Yeah, and if you didn't like Fable 2, then don't even bother. Because it is Fable 2 with a new character. Now, one of the cool things about it is the voice acting. I was listening to the voice acting. There's a lot. We talked about it on the Game Lounge a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about it a couple of weeks ago about who was going to be in on the voice acting. And from what I've been hearing, from what I've been hearing from the game itself, it's some pretty solid voice acting. There's some good humor in this game, that kind of stuff. The game world of Albion has always been pretty good. This one seems maybe a little bit more bare so far, but yeah, we're just cracking into this thing. Early take is if you're into Fable 2, it's worth a shot. One way or another, come hook or crook, give this one a crack. If you didn't like Fable 2, don't even bother. But this sounds like it might be one once we're both through it, to send through the Talking Ship game distribution channel, whatever the official name for that is, that I accidentally started, I guess, and now is on the forums. You can go over to talkingship.com/forums and take a look in the bridge, and you can see what I'm talking about. But yeah, this may turn into something. The first one that I'm going to be sending around is Enslaved, and it's going to make its rounds, and we've got a couple of other guys on the forums that are interested and into sharing their video games with everybody else. So being a tight-knit community that we are, I think this is something that can work for us. And so I'll be sending Enslaved around. And then maybe once we're both through Fable, both have maxed out our experience with Fable 3, that may be one that comes around too. So that is going to do it for the care package. We're going to go on into Fresh Catch.
Hey guys, the Fisherman again, and I am on my own. All the douche is taken off. I'm feeling a little lonely here in the game lounge all by myself. But I wanted to bring you guys a fresh catch, and this one's a pretty hot one. So if you guys are in the market for a new 360 console, here's the deal. It comes with a 360S Arcade, the new 360 with the 4GB disc in it, two wireless controllers, 1 year of Xbox Live, and 4,000 Microsoft points. It costs $250. It's on sale actually at the Microsoft store, the online Microsoft store. And the 360S Arcade on its own costs $200. A wireless controller on its own costs $50. So you get 360S Arcade, two wireless controllers. That's already right there, $250 worth of stuff. But then you get your 1 year of Xbox Live, which costs, well, depending on whether you're listening to this show or not, costs anywhere between $30 and coming up on $60. And then 4,000 Microsoft points, which I think equates to $50 on its own. So you're basically saving between $80 and $100-something. If you haven't somehow gotten a 360 yet, this is the one to get. This is the deal to get. You'll get the S Arcade. You won't get a hard drive in that puppy. It's a little bit of a problem because for some reason you can't play Firefight without a hard drive. I found this out. It seems insane to me that Microsoft has released a Xbox 360 version that cannot play a chief mode of one of their tentpole release games, Halo Reach. Seriously, if you have a 360 S Arcade, if you have an arcade, any kind of arcade console, and you try to play Firefight with your friends, a big message will come up and say, one of the players in this party does not have a hard drive, which is required to play Firefight. And you feel like a douchebag. But hey, if you're not into Halo, or if you're not into Firefight, this is the deal to get. 4 gigabytes is plenty, especially since you can expand the memory yourself with USB sticks up to 16 gigabytes. You can put two of them in there and make it, and give yourself 32 more gigabytes and give yourself a 36 gigabyte. I mean, that's plenty for a gaming console like this, man. You don't need any more than that, especially if you're going to get a great deal on it like this. So go on over to the Microsoft store, get yourself the 360 console, the 360 arcade, two wireless controllers, a year of Xbox Live, and 4,000 Microsoft points, and it costs $250. So that's going to do it for the Fresh Catch, and actually, that's going to do it for the show entirely. I want to thank Aladouche, I want to thank the Fisherwoman for jumping in here with Farva out, just trying to compile a show together for you. But as Farva would say, I got to get back and play some video games, man, so thanks for coming, but it's time for you guys to get the fuck out.